Brad Dacus of the Dacus Report, heard weekly on Bible School Radio 91.3 KDKR Decatur Dallas Fort Worth and on 91.3 KYJC Commerce.
Portions of KDKR programming do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or staff.
Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
What is really going on in the stock market? Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon and welcome to the Prudent Money Radio Show. I'm your host, Bob Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, if you got a question for me, I want to invite you to go to the website at www.prudentmoney.com. There's a couple of ways to get information. The first is to go through the Ask Bob section of the website and just send us an email at info@prudentmoney.com. That's pretty easy to do. Or the second one may be that you have a little bit more complicated question, a little bit more moving parts. Then you'll see my schedule there on the website. Just find a time that works for you, and we'll schedule a phone call and take a few minutes to talk about whatever you need help on. Just making sure that you've got resources out there to deal with today's financial issues. That's all at the website, www.prudentmoney.com. Well, I got to tell you that I'm a little concerned at the way things are taking place in the market and, of course, the way investors are reacting to it. Now, your first thought might be, Bob, can't you just leave a good thing alone? Market's going up. Things look good. Is it okay for things to be okay? And, you know, the whole objective of Prudent Money is to bring to you the other side of the story, where that might not be the best thing. So that I'm not giving you an opinion of what I think. Of course, I'm always glad to do so. At the same time, I want to present, hey, this is the other scenario that may be playing out. So somewhere between the two scenarios, the reality of the situation, it lies right there. And so I think from a stewardship standpoint, what's so very important is that we look at the pro and the con and we make wise decisions based on information research. And of course, to me, you can't get to that wise decision, which is the only point that you get the peace of God and can make that decision, unless you've done your homework. Just following along the opinions of others and not really understanding what they mean is not a recipe for success. Maybe for short term, but it's definitely not on a long-term basis. In 32 years of being a financial advisor, and I would say this, that I haven't been as close to things maybe the first 10, 15 years as I am today. But at the same time, I have never seen anything quite like what we're experiencing. You know, the market has literally taken off like a rocket ship. If you look at a stock market chart, you see the market going straight up. And it's just real interesting for someone like myself that studies this to watch what's really playing out. Now, typically, there are four different scenarios that you would see with this type of stock market and what's taking place. The first is that we've been through a recession and we're still in one, and the market has a tendency to go down and decline before the recession is ever declared. And that's what we've seen, and we've seen the market lose money and go down and then bounce back up and take off again. And you can look at the bear market very mild bear market, but still, to be fair, it was a bear market that lasted 10 months in 2022. That did not happen because of a recession. That was a little bit more of an inflation scare, that kind of thing, but that was not a recession. In fact, we've not had a recession that we could point to and say, oh, that's why the market's going down. So recession would be the first reason for the market to act like that. And we haven't had a recession that would produce this type of market mania where everybody's jumping back into the market. Then there's a stock market bubble. And, you know, what fascinates me about this, let me back up and say, when you're an investment gets into a bubble type environment, it's a situation where everybody starts buying, like real estate, for instance. Everybody starts buying real estate because there's the notion that real estate is going to continue to go up and up and make people very, very rich. That is a bubble, a real estate and bubble. We saw that in 2008 at the height of the financial crisis. But you could look at the artificial intelligence stocks. There's only seven main ones. And there are the questions coming up in the media, is this a bubble? Well, a bubble grows and expands over a period of years. This concept of AI stocks has not been around that long. So I don't even see how anybody could even question whether that's a bubble or not. But it to be fair, it's acting like one without it being one. I hope that makes sense. The end of a bear market. The end of a bear market is like rocket fuel. The market just takes off. And we've had a pretty good rebound from the bottom of the bear market in 2022, which was a very, very light bear market. But the market acted like it was a major one. Or, you know, that's the three things you would look at. The fourth that you would look at is simply, is this just a continuation of what we had between 2022 and 2024? The market is going back to where it was to finish unfinished business. So let me say that a little bit better. Is that you've had the market going up since 2009, the bottom right before or at the financial crisis, it goes up, and then it gets interrupted by a small, very small bear market in 2022, and which should have been the end of that bull market cycle, and which should have begun the development of a bear market cycle. But that's not really what happened. I think what ended up happening is that the point that investors felt comfortable, they, for various reasons, none of which have to be true, they jump back into the market and drive this market higher and higher and higher, just a continuation of what started in 2009. That's what I think is going on. It's just by the looks of things. That would suggest, as we talked about the other day, and the way markets go in cycles, that would suggest that this bull market is in the ninth or so inning, and we could be expecting a bear market of a substantial bear market around the corner. It's just speculation, opinion. We'll see what happens. The bottom line is simply this. You look at what's going on in the market and you think, well, this should have happened. It didn't happen. This should have been this way, but it wasn't that way. And the market's just going up over the success of seven artificial intelligence stocks. Makes absolutely no sense. So it's as if, and there's a lot of reasons for this as well, but it's like the government wants everybody to believe a certain thing, as believe a certain way, and they're going to make it look like it is the way that they that the optic they're trying to create. And as we go into a presidential election, boy, that should be a doozy. We'll see how all this plays out. Bottom line is, I just want you to make sure that you are comfortable with the risks that you are taking, and to make sure that you're not taking way more risk than you should. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and they were talking about, well, how do I reduce risk in my portfolio? And the simplest way, and this isn't something that works all the time by any stretch, it is a way, and it didn't work as well if you didn't use the right bond funds a couple of years ago, because bonds went down as well. I had already taken a look at this gentleman's portfolio and kind of knew what he was doing, and he said, yeah, my advisor talked me into reducing my stock market exposure from 100% down to 80%. And that's obviously a move in the right direction. But if you really want to make impact, you've got to get closer to probably 40, 45, 50% in something that's supposed to be a lot better risk than stocks, which generally is bonds, but bonds, like I said, have lost money. When I mentioned this just a second ago, I was talking about people have been using the wrong bonds, just using bonds because bonds have typically outperformed stocks when the market was going down. The money market accounts, and I still think people are just kind of waking up to this, are at Charles Schwab or Vanguard or Fidelity or anything like that, they are making roughly 5%. They could have gone down some today, but the last time I looked, roughly 5%. That's a good, and it's not advice, just saying that's a good bond substitute. So just make sure you're comfortable with it, and make sure that, because I think we've got a lot of volatility coming up, and just want to make sure that that everybody is not looking at this the wrong way. Hey, this is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thanks so much for joining me today. You know, I do appreciate it. We do have coming up this Friday the new unemployment numbers. Those should be that should be a doozy right there as well. And the market is really looking at that. The market's also looking at what the Fed Chair Jay Powell is going to say, Jerome Powell is going to say, today, this afternoon, about the state of the economy and interest rates. And as we've discussed, the interest rates situation today is really complicated. I mean, as you know, the Fed has raised rates, I think 5.5%. And inflation is really not that far off where it was when they stopped. So the market wants the Fed to start lowering rates again. The problem is, if they start lowering rates, you think that the what you're seeing in the market is big today. I can only imagine what it's going to look like if they start lowering rates. And that all that does is start to feed inflation again. So it's a tough spot for the market to be in. But let me point this one thing out, is that Chairman Powell, just by mentioning lowering rates, has created a mania in the stock market, or a continuation of what was going on in the stock market before we had a 10-month pause. So would not want to be him, and I think it's a dangerous psychology that he's playing, but hey, that's the way it goes. You've heard me talk about Wallet Hub before, wallethub.com. They do some great studies on the economy and on credit card debt and consumer-related information, and they sent out a report ahead of what we'll know by Friday, just kind of giving their ideas. And I wanted to read this to you. It says, we can expect U.S. credit card debt to surpass the previous high of $1.23 trillion without adjusting for inflation. More on that in a second. When you adjust for inflation, the situation is not as dire as it was in December 2008, with debt 10% below that peak. Let me stop right there and say this. What is the most important aspect of the debt problem? And they don't even mention it in here. And I would suggest, is it that the accumulation of debt, that we focus on that 1.23, that it looks like we're going to see credit card debt surpass the previous record high of 1.23 trillion. Is that really the important metric to follow? And of course they say in this report that the situation is not as dire as it was in December 2008 when they had the high in credit card debt, with debt 10% below that peak. So today it's not as high if you adjust for inflation. A couple thoughts on that. The first thing is, can we even trust inflation numbers coming out of the Fed, coming out of the government? We've talked about this quite a bit, and the answer is absolutely not. I don't think we can trust those numbers, because, you know, I always use the grocery store as the way to is the example. All you have to do is go in there and think about what the prices were pre-COVID and what they are today. And that they've come down a little bit, which is good, but there's still an inflation problem that's out there. And it's a complex inflation problem, and kind of unlike the problems of the past. This has got a lot of moving parts to it, a lot of complications to it. And just raising rates is not going to do it, as we've talked about in the past. So the chances that you have the Fed coming out and lowering rates, I still don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But I could be wrong. Been wrong before, and we'll see. But the metric that I think is very important, and it's not that we're surpassing an old record, adjusted for inflation, we're still below it. That is not the point. The point is, there's over $1 trillion worth of debt that is in credit cards that has interest rates at all-time record highs. Anywhere from, depending on who you talk to, 22, 23, 24% on average. That is the story. Not that we're surpassing an amount, a record, and we're hitting record levels. According to adjusted inflation numbers, we're not there. We're still below the record level set in December 2008. That's all not relevant. I mean, it's irrelevant, but it's not as important as the fact that today we have consumers battling credit card debt at way higher average credit card rates than the last time I was at these levels. That's the problem. And it makes me wonder, if I had a list of coming into this year, and this is something I usually do when I do workshops, is I put a list together of the 10, maybe 12 risks that you face with your money this year. And one, without question, was that, how is this going to resolve itself? You know, minimum payments go up and interest payments go up, and you end up paying all this money to interest, barely even touching the principal to knock the debt down. And it's a problem. And it makes me wonder, are people going to be in a mass exodus and drop their credit cards? Just not pay I'm not saying to do that, or I don't think that's the answer, but just to, you know, not pay back credit card and go into default and fight the system. It really does make me wonder if that's coming down the pike, because I just don't see any other way. Because when it comes down to it, if you're going to choose to feed your family or pay your credit card debt, I think we all know what people would pick. Now, you know, from the standpoint of consumers have created this problem, and there shouldn't just be an easy way out. You make your bed, you lay in it, all that. And I get that. And I'm not saying that this was had anything to do with financial irresponsibility. It is what it is. The problem that I'm pointing out is that the credit card companies are taking advantage of the situation. And I will try to stay off my soapbox, but 23 to 25, 24, whatever the number is, it's way, 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 way higher than it should be. They're taking advantage of the situation. As I said the other day, if the Fed started to lower interest rates, it would barely make a dent into the interest rate credit card companies are paying. Barely make a dent. And I think that it's the ultimate definition of greed. That, you know, when is enough profit enough? I mean, could they still get by if they charged 18% or 17%? But I think it's a mess. And the Wallet Hub editor had some interesting things to say. He said inflation is easing up, which is true, but it's still creating misperceptions when it comes to just how bad the situation with credit card debt really is. That I think is true as well. In absolute terms, we've never owed more. In inflation-adjusted terms, the run-up into the Great Recession was worse. Still, we don't expect the latest numbers from the Fed to show the consumers ended 2023 on an especially strong note, or that we've changed course to start 2024. We have a lot of work left to do. So I think what we're looking at is, and I'm driving down this big cycle back to where we were when we started the program, is that it really comes down to the stock market and staying in its winning ways, is keeping up the growth, because that I think changes the mood of consumers. And whether today's investor keeps these gains or not, they certainly do feel good about their retirement and that kind of thing. That helps. I would hate to think what would happen given a recession, given some negativity and some real reporting, given a high unemployment situation. What happens to this 1.23 trillion dollars worth of credit card debt? And then what happens as a result of that? It'll be interesting, and we'll as always, we'll keep you posted on what that looks like. Once again, $1.23 trillion of credit card debt. If you look at that number, 1 trillion is a million millions. It really is hard to get your arms wrapped around that. I used to go to the debt clock that you can find on the internet, and we'll look at the numbers, the debt numbers. That, I mean, they can just continue to climb every day, and the politicians it seems as if they don't care, and they're not even paying attention to it. But the last time I looked, I think this was right, $34 trillion worth of debt of all kinds. What could go wrong? So that, my friends, is the other side of the story. If you've got a question for me, please go to the website, www.prudentmoney.com. We are all out of time. Until we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.